All right, welcome back. This is going to be a cool segment. We've got Dr. Vinita Mehta with us. Two doctors in a row. Very good. She's a clinical psychologist and a journalist. She's got a blog on Psychology Today, and that's where I found all her great writing on Psychology Today. Her blog is entitled Head Games, and she's also working on a book about dating, mating, relationships, and all that sort of stuff. Doctor, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. And I'm a fan of you and Psychology Today and all of your articles, so we got a lot to cover. So I want to kind of start out with an article you wrote about dating is a numbers game, because whether there are more women in a city than men or less women in a city than men, it affects how men behave. So if there's a shortage of women, you know, men spend more money in that city to impress the women, and the women have higher standards. And if there are less women in a city, then the women can have higher standards. So it's vice versa. So can you explain that to us?
Sure. I mean, what's so crazy about this study is basically what the researchers were looking at was, how do gender imbalances affect financial decision making? And what they found out was, when there are more men to women, that the financial decision making on the part of men just completely breaks down. And that's because the mating competition gets so intense.
Got it.
When mating competition gets intense, it's basically impulsivity takes over. You know, all kinds of things begin to break down. And that's, you know, basically if their mating psychology is activated and they're advertising to women, hey, go out with me, I'm the one you want.
Right. And they took, as an example here, they took two cities in Georgia. One is Macon, Georgia, and the other is Columbus, Georgia. And they're about 100 miles apart, so very similar culture, similar people. Everything's pretty much the same. Yet Columbus, Georgia has a lot more men than women. So almost 1.2 men for every woman. So a ton of men in Columbus. In Macon, Georgia, there are very few men compared to women. So there's a major male deficit in Macon. So in a city like Columbus, where there are tons of men, all of these men have more debt that they carry on their credit cards, $3,500 more, because they're trying to impress all of these women. And the women have higher standards for the type of person that they'll marry. So I guess they did. This is actually true, that men will spend more if they feel like they have to compete for women.
Exactly. I mean, again, what's happening is that when the more intense mating competition becomes among men, and it's funny, women really don't respond in this same way. It's for men are very, very sensitive to the numbers. And so, and that's because if you look to animal studies and you look to human studies, it's the men who are more likely to get shut out when they have to try to outcompete rivals.
Mm-hmm.
Women are really not in that situation. Even if there's a shortage of women, they don't respond by becoming financially rash or impulsive. This is a very characteristic male response.
Okay, interesting. And you talk about women having intrinsic psychological or physiological motivations and men having extrinsic motivations. Can you talk about what that is and why?
Well, basically, you know, the deal is this, is that women, it comes down to something called parental investment theory. And the idea is, you know, back in the ancestral environment, you know, thousands of years ago, hunter-gatherer times, that what you have is women have a much higher level of parental investment because, you know, we're the ones who have to actually carry the child and raise the child.
Mm-hmm.
So men's needs are more extrinsic. So they will... What they're trying to do is they're trying to prove to women, hey, I've got the resources to take care of you once this child is born, and I'm going to stick around to do it. So that's the idea, is that, you know, women are more of like the receivers and men are more of like the givers.
Okay, cool.
When it comes to, and it's all based around, you know, having children.
Right. And there was an actual study, doctor, where, and I thought this was a brilliant study, and once again, this is in Psychology Today. And they basically had a guy, you know, in his late 20s, early 30s, try to pick up women on a street. And they had the guy, you know, do this in three different scenarios. And they tested, you know, many different guys. So that way it was a control variable. And so a guy would show up in a very expensive car and try to pick up women, you know, outside the car. And then a guy would show up in a medium price car and then in a very low price car. And the results were fascinating, and they did this with many different men, and all the women were different, so the results are pretty steady here. And it shows that if you were in an expensive car asking a girl for her number, you had a 23% chance to get it. If you're in a middle value car, you had a 12% chance. And if you're in a low value car, only an 8% chance. So that's an exact example with the exact same guy who was in three different cars. So you can't say, oh, was he better looking or worse looking? It was the exact same guy showing up in three different cars.
Exactly.
That he was much more likely in an expensive car to get a woman's phone number.
Exactly. And again, it shows how men and women are sort of attuned to, you know, these are very, very ancient mechanisms that we're dealing with. So even in a modern context, a woman's still going to be attuned to a man's resources. And they're all different kinds of cues, whether it's a fancy car or whether it's a fancy dinner. And for a man, he really wants to advertise, if he can, hey, I'm the one who's got the resources.
Gotcha. Okay, and then this applies to men, you know, versus women in the sense that men, you know, try to demonstrate that they have the money. And as an example, they say that men are much more charitable in the actual presence of women. But when we're not in the presence of women, we're not. And I know this is true because, you know, I don't really like giving to homeless people because they're just going to use the money to buy booze. Yet if I'm on a date with a girl and, you know, we walk by a homeless person, I'll give the guy a dollar. Well, one, so he doesn't attack me. And two, because it makes me look generous. So the girl feels like I'm a nice guy. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. Again, I mean, if, you know, women are looking, you know, to you in this situation. Is he generous? Will he provide? Will he be, you know, will he be free with his resources with me and the children that we bear?
Okay, got
again.
It.
Yeah.
All right. Now, doctor, I want to keep moving to another article. Once again, if you're just joining us, Dr. Vanita Mehta, clinical psychologist and journalist, a great writer at Psychology Today. You can check out her blog, Head Games, where she writes about dating, mating, and relationships. So the next piece of advice you have, if you're dating online, to wear red in your photos because red symbolizes love and sex, and that there are actual scientific studies that show if you're wearing red in a photo, that the opposite sex is more attracted to that. Can you explain all about this?
Sure. You know, the effect is that when men see a woman in red, that, you know, to him, that's a signal of, you know, receptivity. Because basically when we, you know, again, this comes, you know, we look back to our primate cousins, and, you know, when our primate cousins experience estrus, you know, certain areas turn red. And so this is, the scientists believe that this is sort of, you know, a remnant of that time period in human evolution. So red signifies, you know, I am receptive to, you know, your advances.
Okay, and they say, what is it, during ovulation, women's faces and bodies become more rosy because of heightened blood vessel activity. So
yeah.
Literally, a woman's face during ovulation is more red, and so the color red is signifying mating, and so that makes men like women who wear red more?
Exactly. I mean, basically, when men see red, they see that as a signal of sexual receptivity.
Interesting.
And so then they become attracted to the, you know, to those women.
Okay,
more.
So that song, Lady in Red, there's something to that, Lady in Red, that in
Absolutely.
Ancient times, maybe it was inspired by cavemen.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Very good. Now, doctor, one last story for you, and this is interesting. This is the benefits of monogamy for society at large. Now, I guess Tiger Woods would hate a story like this. But this is cool because, you know, once again, this is in Psychology Today. You're talking about the science behind monogamy and why societies that have that are much better off financially, and it reduces crime. It's good for the family unit, basically the respect of women. And I guess this holds true if you look at the Middle East, where there is zero respect for women and the cultures are so violent, they're economically impoverished, and, you know, they marry 18 different women. There's a lot to be said, and you come to five different conclusions. And I want to run through these five different conclusions about why monogamy helps society in general. So is it okay if I run through them?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, and once again, you're the author. I'm just reading your work, so it's not like I'm taking credit. I have no clue what I'm talking about.
And I'm just supporting the work of other people. So.
Okay, good. We're all copying each other. Like Picasso
yes,
said,
exactly.
Good artists copy, great artists steal. So I wrote this article. All right, so the first benefit of monogamy is that it reduces crime, and that young males who aren't good-looking in societies that aren't monogamous, you know, if a really good-looking, wealthy guy can marry 15 women, it means that there's less women for the men lower on the totem pole. And those lower men on the totem pole can be dangerous. They'll commit crimes. They'll take more risk. So tell us about this, how society benefits by reduced crime rate when we believe in monogamy. Go ahead.
Well, basically, the idea, it comes down again to the intensity of mating competition. And if there are these, you know, quote unquote, low ranking men who are going to get shut out of the mating game, all kind of societal ills take over. And so basically, they're just very frustrated. They're very angry. They can't get in the game. They're jealous of, you know, these alpha guys, and they start committing all kinds of crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But if these, you know, if these low ranking guys can actually, you know, mate and have marriages, well, then, you know, their attention then gets directed to their marriage instead of, you know, being so frustrated.
Okay. And what do you think about societies? Like, if you look at China, their one-child policy, and a lot of the times it's very sad, but the parents, if they know they're having a daughter, will take, you know, it's just horrible. This happens in China, but they all want to have a male heir. So in China, there's a sex imbalance, you know, almost 20% more males than females amongst the younger generation. So I guess because of this, men are going to have trouble meeting women. And even though it may not be a monogamy issue, it's just an imbalance issue. Do you predict in China in 20 years there's going to be more crime?
Well, you know, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, the culture is so different because they come from a culture where there's, you know, the whole system of dowries is actually not that long ago. So, you know, it just may be that they might, you know, and they actually address this in the article, that what might end up happening is that they might end up trying to save up so much money just to, you know, get the women.
Gotcha.
So that they can afford to get women.
Oh, okay. So you're saying it could be, in a way, a better thing, is that men will work harder to try to compete for women. So economically in China, instead of through violence in other cultures, like maybe the Middle East, in China, they're going to work hard to kind of buy women with a dowry because that's just the way that they roll. All right, let's get to the second one. The second benefit of monogamy for society, good for girls and women, because if men can marry multiple women, and you see this like in Afghanistan or in sub-Saharan Africa, that essentially they'll marry younger and younger women, like 14-year-old girls, that type of thing. So talk to us why it's better for women and for girls that society believes in monogamy. Go ahead.
Well, basically, you know, what ends up happening is in these societies where you have sort of the top-ranking men who are getting all girls, there's none left over for the low-ranking men. So if you basically what ends up happening is, again, if the low-ranking men can get into the mating game, then you won't have these older men plucking these young girls for marriage at such a young age before they're really ready.
Got it. Or the low-ranking men need to turn to young girls because that's all they can get, because the girls of age are going with all these uber men, the alpha men, who have seven wives.
Well, I think that, you know, for older men, the appeal of younger women probably would, you know, still kind of hold sway.
Gotcha. Okay, interesting. Then you said the third benefit of monogamy for society is that it's good for the economy. So men aren't focused in diverting their attention on attaining additional wives because society doesn't accept that. So they focus on their jobs and building things. Tell us about that.
Well, basically, you know, again, it's a matter of like, where are you going to direct your attention and your resources? I mean, if there are enough women for all the men, then they don't really have to sit around and compete with each other.
Okay. And that goes along with the next one, that, you know, in a monogamy societies, men are better fathers because they're just spending more time with the kids instead of finding new wives, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So again, it's sort of, you know, it's a question of like, where are you going to direct your attention? Are you going to direct it to competing and all the problems that go with competing? Or, you know, once you get a mate, you actually have the freedom to start thinking about other things like your kids, like your job, and you can be a much more productive member of society.
Okay. And this last one makes the most sense, is that in monogamous societies, more peaceful households you'll find, because, you know, in societies that don't have it, there's a lot of even more domestic violence because multiple wives will be fighting over the one husband's resources, and the wives aren't related to each other, and they essentially begin to hate each other and create, you know, problems at home because they're trying to, you know, take care of their kids, and there's so many different kids and so many different wives that they tend to fights break out.
Exactly. I mean, one man as alpha as he is, you know, he's going to, you know, the resources are going to thin out at a certain point. And there's going to be a disproportionate allocation. You know, some wives, the favorite wives, might get more.
Okay.
And, you know, and then certain kids are going to get, you know, they're not going to get enough from their fathers. But if, you know, in a monogamous system, a father can be much more devoted to his child and give him or her much more of his time and attention.
All right, doctor. Once again, I know Tiger Woods hated that, but I think it's good for society. And you're a great sport, an excellent writer. Dr. Vanita Mehta, clinical psychologist and journalist. Check out her blog, Head Games. Psychology Today is where you can find her writing. Doctor, we got to have you back. That was very cool. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Love to be back.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Awesome. You got it.